10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this, at least it's overcast down south of town, a little gray, overcast, maybe a little rain in the middle of the night. I don't know what it was like everywhere else. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville, and I'm not sure what the weather's like there. Is it sunny?
Got a little sprinkle.
A little sprinkle? Okay, so you got sprinkle. Gray, overcast, yeah. A little sprinkle. Chase
yep.
McCabe.
So it could be sprinkling over at the stadium, which is nearby here.
That's right. And we're going to check in with Terry McCormick. The Titans do have a practice over at Nissan Stadium in about 15 minutes. Chase McCabe is going to be on afternoons today with Floyd Reese, who joined us yesterday on the program. We had a really interesting conversation with the GM in the second hour about going out and trying to find a certain type of guy that maybe necessarily you can't pick up anything in what you're looking for on film, and how do you go about that? So it was an interesting conversation. So he will be filling in today from 2 until 6 p.m. with Floyd Reese. So Chase will not be with us. Max Herz is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. So what is it doing back by the airport, Max? Raining too?
It's thinking about it.
Yeah? It's got rain on its mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for the weather.
Yeah. Don't want to speak for them? That's fine. They can give you hints. Like, it's hinting down your thought bubble says, I'm thinking about raining, but I'm not sure. That's what it looks like down here in Smyrna. How about the only two games? We talked about this yesterday, Willie. Only two games in the NHL. It's been fun kind of getting these 13-hour marathon, like NCAA tournament style, for the NHL playoffs, but as teams get bounced and sent home from the bubble, the schedule is going to get shifted more to, you know, nighttime play, and that was the case last night. And how about Barry Trotz and the Islanders pitching the shutout over the Capitals in dominating fashion in that series, winning 4-1?
It was really impressive to watch. They just did not allow one of the most talented offensive teams in the league, in the Capitals, any breathing room at all. They just could not get any good looks at all, particularly in the third period when the Islanders were ahead. It was like a boa constrictor. You know, the harder that the Capitals would push and try to get in there, the tighter the grip would be. They couldn't do it. And then two empty net goals blew it away. What a feeling it's got to be for Barry Trotz. You know Barry Trotz is not ever going to gloat, but privately, that has got to be one of the more satisfactory feelings that you can have in terms of, you know, beating a team that you know there's got to be some hard feelings behind the scenes. They did not value him the way I thought he should have been valued after you win a Stanley Cup. Almost nobody doesn't bring their coach back after you win the Stanley Cup. The Capitals had their reasons, but the Capitals have not won a playoff series since.
They have not. Look, if you've got blood pumping through your veins and you take in oxygen and you breathe, in other words, you have a pulse, there's no doubt what you said is taking place. There's no doubt Barry Trotz is smiling from earlobe to earlobe here today when he woke up, because that was a very, very satisfactory series win for him. And yes, as you mentioned, now the Islanders have punched their ticket into round two both years on his watch, and the Capitals have not. They haven't won a series yet. And the bottom line is right now, it looks like they've made a huge mistake. And look, we all, like I said, we all, even the classiest of the classiest of people, which is Barry Trotz, don't tell me he doesn't have the competitive spirit, because we all know he does. And we know what drives him. And, yeah, he's not going to say it publicly, but privately, he's going, take that, Washington. You left me out to dry, and I took you all the way to the Stanley Cup Final and won it when I knew you weren't bringing me back no matter what. and I still got it done, and here I am with the Islanders. And, oh, by the way, when I signed up to coach the Islanders, their best player walked to Toronto for more money. So you lost your best player, and all the Islanders have done is gotten better since they lost their best player under Barry Trotz. And, oh, by the way, those Leafs, they haven't won a playoff series yet either.
Isn't that something? And all through it, Barry Trotz comes out shining. The handshake line between the Capitals and the Islanders, I don't know if you happen to catch it. You could see that his former players were happy for him. They were crushed that they had gotten beat. But Alex Ovechkin, Braden Holtby, you know, some of those players, they stopped the handshake line to have a little extra word with Barry Trotz. You can see the personal connection that he makes. And you made great points about the Islanders. The Islanders had their roster raided. You know, their best player, their franchise player, left them, and they've had more success since he's left. It just shows you that the team structure that Barry Trotz has always, and he learned here when he had very little talent to work with. He knew he had to have a great team that was more than the sum of its parts, and I think that has always served him well as he's gone forward here. So Islanders are doing great things. We heard Elliot Friedman yesterday talk about the structure. They play with that structure. They're playing as a team right now. They're not going to excite you with 5-4 wins or anything close to that, but they're going to make it awfully tough to be beat.
The Islanders just clinched a series in the Stanley Cup playoffs and won 4-0, albeit, like you said, two empty netters to close it out. On how many shots? I'm sure you've seen it because I know you watched.
Oh, I was watching it. It was, first of all, it was the shots. They didn't give up many shots.
I understand. I'm getting there.
It was past the halfway point of the third. I think the shots were something like 18-13 or something. I don't know. I think it. What did it end up? 22-19 or something like that?
21 shots for Washington in a losing cause. 17 shots for the Islanders.
17?
For the game. 17 shots, and they won 4-0 and clinched a series on 17 shots.
Yep, and two of the shots were empty net goals.
Yeah.
So they really had 15 shots against the goalie. But it was all they needed. You give that team the lead, it's going to be very hard to come back.
Is that not unbelievable? 17 shots.
What's the saying? Some people that might be listening and going, okay, you know, I don't know a whole lot about hockey, but there's an adage that plays in any sport you want to play. You know, pick any sport or game. Defense wins championships. That's the Islanders.
Yep. And now they move on to the second round. And then in the nightcap, Calgary, we all took the Calgary Flames. Let me see. Hold on. Let me make sure before I say that. Yep, I've got the sheet in front of me. Yep, we all took Calgary. By the way, we all took the Islanders. So we hit on that. We all took Vegas. We hit on that. We're doing much better in round one.
We're doing better.
But we all took Calgary.
Did I take Tampa?
I think I took Tampa.
You took Tampa. I was thinking about this yesterday.
I took Tampa. Chase took Columbus.
I know I took Carolina, too, so I know that I went down with
that
one.
So both of us took Carolina. Chase took Boston. So we're all even on our picks. But Calgary comes out like their hair's on fire. Oh, wait a minute. They are the Flames, so you could say that.
Yes.
First period. Woo! Boy, looking like this series is going 7. 3-0 Calgary. Dallas gets they do get a goal in the first period. 3-1. It's all Flames. And then and that was it. And Dallas just came out.
It happened so fast.
And that was see you later. Happy by the end of two, it was like, what just happened? How did that just happen? They went from being down 3-0 and they were up 6-3 after 40 minutes.
The Predators have played the Stars a lot because they're in the same division. They've played in the Winter Classic. They played against each other in the playoffs. So Predator fans probably know who Denis Gurianov is, but he just became a household name or a guy that you're going to put in the record books, a rookie that had four goals in a playoff game.
Yep.
It's only happened, I think, one other time. Yep. Four goals.
Four
but
goals.
It seemed like everything was going in. It seemed like every shot was going in. You just like it was the opposite of the Islanders game, where it felt like you could play two more periods and the Capitals just weren't going to score. That's the feeling you got. In this game, it felt like every time Dallas came down the ice, Dallas is not an offensive juggernaut. Dallas's problem is scoring goals. But it's the Flames, for whatever reason, they just could not stop them. It seemed like every time they came down the ice, they're going to score.
I know. It was unbelievable
Crazy.
To watch. Unbelievable. I actually was getting disinterested. I turned away for a bit when it was 3-1. I was like, Calgary's going to win this, so we're going 7. I'll come back a little bit later. I came back, and I'm like, holy crap. What in the world is going on? And then, of course, I watched for a good while. You've got to be kidding me. Yeah. So two teams punched their ticket into round two last night. So the Islanders get it done with a 4-0 shutout victory over the Capitals. They win that series 4-1. And the Dallas Stars punch their ticket into round two as they defeat the Flames 7-3 and win that series in 6 games. So that sets up today. Can the Flyers move on? They're up 3-2 on the Canadiens. Can Shea Weber and company stay alive in that series? And can the defending Stanley Cup champs stay alive? So 2 games tonight. First one starting at 6 o'clock, Philadelphia and Montreal. And then in the nightcap, around 8:45 our time, it'll be the Blues and the Knuckleheads. Can Vancouver get into the second round and beat St. Louis tonight? So that's what's at stake, and that's it. That's all that's left. If Philadelphia and Vancouver take care of business tonight, over the weekend, we'll be talking about getting on to round two of the playoffs. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out tonight. What do you think?
It's been pretty awesome. I thought Montreal was done going into the last game, but You got to give him a chance. We got to figure out. I haven't seen if Brendan Gallagher is
I think
okay.
I think he's out.
Is he okay?
Yeah, no, I think I've seen him. He's out.
He's a key player. Especially in the playoffs. He's one of those guys that you've been talking about, Darren, the profile that the Predators could use. You know, unbelievable. He's not a big guy, but boy, does he stick his nose in there. He'll get into that tough area. He will stir it up.
He's
they
out.
Will miss him.
Broken jaw. If he out.
Oh, man. That's, I don't know.
Done. Got to have surgery.
I don't know if they can win.
He's out. Yeah, I don't either. They're done.
Oh, boy. I would have to go with the Flyers. The other one, I think the Blues will get even in this. I think this one's destined to go 7 here. The Blues have got it revved up. Vancouver's done a great job to be up 3-2. Winning game 6 in particular, coming from behind, I just didn't see it. But I think the Blues will win this game tonight. Meanwhile, Darren, the league now that has the afternoon action, NCAA tournament style, the NBA's got that cranking now. They've got the day-long bubble stuff. It starts at 12:30 with Toronto and Brooklyn. The one seeds came back strong last night. The Lakers had an easy time, and now Damian Lillard, speaking of key guys getting hurt, he got hurt for the Blazers. They weren't going to win anyway, but now – or at least game 2 they weren't going to win. But now Lillard going forward, I don't know. That series is taking a turn here.
And you think the Lakers happened. Were listening to people talking about how the Blazers were going to win that series?
I think some of that info might have infiltrated the bubble.
Oh, I think so. I think that looked like a team on a mission last night or yesterday, whenever I watched it. It's all running together. Yeah, that you could tell early on, like, oh, this is – yeah, Blazers are toast this game. This is all Lakers.
And the lottery was executed last night for the NBA, and the Timberwolves have the first pick. Will they go into the Ball family? Will they take LaMelo Ball? That's the question. Or possibly Anthony Edwards from Georgia? The one and done from the SEC?
Yeah, I'm not high on him. I'm not sure how he's going to translate. No, I watch him and I just don't get wild. I don't know. There's just certain guys I've heard everybody tell me how great they are, and I watch them, and I'm just like, I'm not wild by them. But.
Yeah, Yeah, first round pick, I see, but first pick in the draft, you know, lead us to great things. I'm not sure I see that in him either.
Me either. All right, we'll come back. Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. He covers the Titans. He's been doing it ever since they came to Nashville. They are going to be practicing at Nissan Stadium today. We'll talk to him on the other side. He's also got some new plans for TitanInsider.com. We'll tell you about all that on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Friday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day, or a good day to this point. A lot of you have been started for a long time. Let's bring in Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. He is starting a new look at that website, and I'm going to let Terry tell you all about it. Terry, what's up?
Well, thanks for having me, Darren and Willie. Titan Insider, as you well know, Darren, started in 2010 when you and I created it together. And
around this time, by the way.
Around this time, exactly.
In August is when we launched.
Absolutely. And it's going to have a new look. Starting on Monday, we have a brand new partnership, and it's with Main Street Media. And for those who may not be familiar with Main Street Media, they are a community network of local newspapers they're basically the hometown community papers in cities like Gallatin, Hendersonville, Portland, Springfield, Murfreesboro, Lebanon, Dixon, Clarksville, you name it. And they're pretty much around the Nashville area in the suburban counties and whatnot. And we have agreed to a partnership, and they're going to be running Titan Insider copy in some of their publications, and we're going to be partnering to work on ad sales for the website, and also there may be plans for a podcast down the road.
Outstanding. So all this starts new look on Monday?
Monday.
All right.
That's when it all starts. I'm excited about it.
Well, congratulations on that, and gosh, it is hard to believe that it's been a decade since TitanInsider.com launched, and we started that venture teaming up with 24/7 Sports, Shannon Terry and Bobby Burton and that crew over there, and still going strong a decade later. So the Titans will be over at Nissan Stadium today taking in a practice. What do you make of that? We know there's no preseason. How do you view camp to this point?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I think, first of all, I'm sitting here in the parking lot of Nissan Stadium waiting to go in. Looks like it's going to be a little bit of a drizzly wet practice, a little bit of rain falling here in Nissan Stadium. So that's going to be an interesting adjustment for them to deal with. There will be no sanctity of the bubble to go into in this practice for the Titans if the rain starts to get a little harder. But thus far, I think it's interesting. You know, when you're just sitting there watching practice from the field and seeing what's going on, other than there being more restricted areas and you're doing the Zoom meetings for the interviews so that there's really no player-to-media interaction or no coach-to-media interaction in person, it looks like a normal practice except for when a coach has his mask on or something like that. But the fact that there's no preseason, that there are no joint practices, which had kind of become the rage around the league the last couple of years, is going to make this entirely different. I think you saw a good example of how different it is a couple of days ago when the Titans decided to move on from seventh-round rookie Cole McDonald and brought in veteran quarterback Trevor Siemian to be a more sure thing as their backup, because the plan was to groom Logan Woodside with the preseason games this summer and let him be the number two quarterback and then have Cole McDonald as either a 53rd guy / practice squad guy, whichever one was a better fit, and let him be the developmental guy for down the road and try it that way. But because there's no preseason, because there's no joint practices or anything like that, they had to make a move. They had to get somebody with some experience, because what happens if Ryan Tannehill has an ankle injury during the season? You're not going to trust an untested Logan Woodside, and you're certainly not going to trust Cole McDonald. So that's an example of how just because a guy had experience and you can bring him in and kind of crash course him, he's a better option than a developmental guy right now because there's no way to develop him.
Yeah, but, I mean, honestly, is it that big of a difference? And, I mean, they've been glowing about Logan Woodside. What's changed? I mean, we knew he has not been tested. He is a what? So what? You feel more comfortable in preseason action? He's had preseason action. They like him. So what's changed?
Well, I just think that they felt like when you look at this roster, when you look at this team, look where they went last year to the AFC Championship game. So this is not a rebuilding team. This is not the Titans of 2015 where, you know, they're going to be lucky to win three games. This team believes that it can go deep in the playoffs once again. So to me, that was a glaring hole. Logan Woodside is the backup quarterback, not because the kid may not have talent, but because he has zero experience. How many non-experienced quarterbacks get the keys to a playoff team?
Yeah, but it was a glowing weakness to you. It was a glowing weakness to this show. We've talked about it, and probably a whole lot of other people. We've talked about it a lot. So, but they have been absolutely behind the Logan Woodside movement and telling us how great he is and how good, and they even trotted him out for Zoom calls. And I'm just saying that's fine. They know him better than us, but what changed? I mean, it seemed like they were willing to stand up and say, you guys don't believe in him. We do. And then all of a sudden we're sitting here today going, but now we're going to use Trevor Siemian as the backup.
Well, I think what happened is more a reflection, as much a reflection of Logan Woodside as it is, as much a reflection of Cole McDonald as it is of Logan Woodside. You know, I think they kind of realized that, one, they need a backup with some experience, which Trevor Siemian brings. You know, now granted, I agree with you, we've been saying it all along that they needed somebody with more experience than Logan Woodside. But they don't have the time or the means this year to develop a guy like Cole McDonald. Cole McDonald was not going to factor into the 2020 Titans in any way, shape, or form in a game. And if he had to, then this team is headed for a top five pick. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. Of course.
So I think that Cole McDonald kind of became expendable to them, and it allowed them to bring in Trevor Siemian to compete with Logan Woodside for the number two job. I think they felt like, you know, Logan Woodside had played some in preseason against, you know, third teamers. Let's be honest. He was playing against guys who were going to be selling cars.
Yeah.
And you know, at the end of August, right?
Uber drivers.
Exactly. But this year, I think the plan was that he was going to play against guys who were going to be in the league. He was going to play against the twos, maybe even start a preseason game and play against the ones so that it would look more real. And I think those plans were derailed because of the COVID and because of the cancellation of the preseason. And I think that's why they decided that we can't go with a guy who has zero experience when we can't even get him halfway legitimate experience in the preseason.
What is the right side of the offensive line going to look like?
Well, it's going to be Nate Davis and it's going to be Dennis Kelly to start with. And Dennis Kelly's going to have a leg up in this competition, I think, for a lot of the same reasons that Trevor Siemian is here, is because he's got experience. He knows what he's supposed to do. He knows his assignments. Now, does Isaiah Wilson have a lot more upside? Is Isaiah Wilson probably going to be your tackle for the next 4 to 6 years at some point? Yeah, I would think so if he pans out. But right now, because he had no offseason other than Zoom calls, because he's kind of getting on-the-job training here as we go through training camp, he's a guy that is a little bit behind the eight ball and a little bit behind in terms of what he's going to be able to bring to the offense. So there could eventually be a change at that spot, but I would look probably 70-30 that Dennis Kelly is going to be your opening day right tackle.
By the way, real quick before Willie jumps in here, the Broncos have announced that there will be no fans in the stands for that Monday night football opener against the Titans. So just wanted to pass that along.
Hmm. So, not Terry, let's...
No.
Yeah, let's go to the other side of the ball, Terry. How do you think the chemistry looks? And it's hard. I'm sure it's hard for you to answer this question, but... You know, everybody's curious on Mike Vrabel as he shifted the roles around. He's going to be more hands-on with the defense. There's no defensive coordinator, I guess, by name. How does it look to you?
Looks largely similar to what it has looked. I think, you know, from a personnel standpoint, they're going to miss Jarrell Casey. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that Jeffrey Simmons is going to be the guy that they're going to count on to step up and fill that role. In terms of scheme, I don't think you'll see a lot of difference, and I think that that's probably one reason that they didn't bring in a defensive coordinator from the outside is because with all that's going on this offseason, they wanted to keep as much continuity as possible and try to keep this same system and this same scheme going. Now, as far as who's going to call the plays on Sunday, I think it's probably going to be Mike Vrabel. As far as who's going to put the package together, the defensive game plan, I think – Vrabel's fingerprints will be on that, but I think it's going to be Shane Bowen. I think you're going to see some of Jim Haglett, who's come in to be the inside linebackers coach, is probably going to have some say in it. I think pretty much every position coach will probably have some type of contribution to that defensive game plan with no defensive coordinator per se to be able to, you know, put his stamp on it. So I think it's going to be a collective effort, but the buck's going to stop with Vrabel.
One thing everybody's going to be looking at is, have they improved their pass rush? With the personnel that they have right now, what's best case, what's worst case in your mind?
Best case is that Beasley finally passes the physical and figures out that he still has some football left in him. I think, you know, that's a guy they brought in and they're hoping to get some good mileage out of. I think they were hoping that on a one-year deal he might show himself – motivated. I don't know necessarily that that's the case right now because we've barely seen him. We saw him one day working off on the side of the field, so we do know that he's still in existence. But other than that, we don't know a whole lot about Mr. Beasley except what people in Atlanta tell us about how he was down there. Best case scenario is that they get him. He comes in, he's motivated to play, and that makes Harold Landry a better player because there's somebody to account for on the other side, and that Jeffrey Simmons is disruptive in the middle of the defensive line, which allows other guys, because I think they're still going to have to do some blitzing and all like they did with Logan Ryan last year to try and manufacture pressure. Worst case scenario is Vic Beasley doesn't pan out and they're forced to go with basically the same guys on the outside that they did last year when we saw Harold Landry start off hot and then fade down the stretch, I think, because they overused him. I think the wild card in this is a couple of guys that last year kind of came on as the season ended. Kamalai Correa, the light seemed to come on for him in the second half of last year, and they got some good snaps from him. And then Derek Roberson, kind of a situational guy, not real great on first and second down against the run, but a guy who can come in on third down and turn the corner and get to the quarterback. So I think those are guys that they want to step it up and continue to put up decent numbers. But I think the wild card in all this, the big question in all this is, can they get Vic Beasley healthy and motivated, and can they get enough out of him that it'll take some of the pressure off of Landry?
Terry McCormick is with us from TitanInsider.com. Terry, Darren and I can certainly envision, and all fans that have been to a training camp before can envision what the intensity, what a preseason practice looks like in a normal year. You've been doing this for a long, long time. What is the difference in the way a practice looks? I've been watching the Hard Knocks, and it does dawn on me now that, you know, everything's behind from what we see. They do the week of filming, and then they put together their episode. But the early practices look so different. You know, they've had so many workouts where nobody's even wearing a helmet, and then at the end they start wearing helmets, but it's still nothing close to a real football situation. What have you seen from how the Titans are going about it? What are the big differences?
Well, one of the big differences is that they try to social distance as much as they can when they can. And you can't do that very well on a football field, obviously, when you're going across from the guy and, you know, your job is to block him or your job is to shed a block, that sort of thing. The coaches are in masks. You know, they'll occasionally pull the mask down to speak, and, you know, if they're not audible enough. But the coaches, for the most part, are wearing masks while practice is going on. Each player, you know, there's not the the drinking, you know, bucket, you know, that the hose that squirts out and they drink water from that. Nobody's sharing anything. Everybody has their own individual water bottle, their own individual towel. The running backs the other day, when they were doing individual drills, every player had a football. The football had their number on it. Derrick Henry's had a 22 on it, so that no one else besides Derrick Henry and the ball boy would touch that football. So that's some of the subtle differences that you're seeing as part of all this. You have to kind of look for when they're playing between the whistle, it still looks like football. But when they're in between things and they're doing individual drills, you start to notice some of those subtleties and some of those changes that have been made to cope with the coronavirus.
Darren, I'd like to make this announcement for those that that care, which is none, besides Terry and I. We're in the same Terry got me into this What If Sports Simulated Baseball League. I'd like to report that both of us are in last place in the season that we just started here. This is our third season since the pause happened in March, and I thank Terry for changing my world, because now I'm in this alternate universe, which is simulated baseball. Terry has lost in the World Series in the first two. I've made the playoffs in the first two. Terry and I right now are both in last place. The problem is my Mets are 2-11 and 9 games out of first. Terry's team is 7-6. He's the Angels, and he's only 2 games out. So last place can mean different things. So, Terry, good luck to you in the rest of the season. My
Why
team
the
certainly
Angels?
Needs it.
Why aren't you because, the Yankees?
Because Mitch Light scarfed up the Yankees before I could get to them.
Oh, wow. Some tension.
There's more than one Yankee fan in this league.
Some tension between The Athletic and TitanInsider.com.
Yeah, there you go.
Terry, best of luck with everything
moving forward. Mitch's Yankees are also in last place there, you'd be glad to know. They're 4-9. They're not doing well.
Hey, good luck with everything on Monday. Enjoy the practice today at Nissan Stadium, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good, guys. Thanks.
All right, that is Terry McCormick. TitanInsider.com, new look starting on Monday. And it is hard to believe that site was launched a decade ago. This month, a decade ago. And still running strong.
How about that?
Yep, we'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5, the game. Nashville SC back at it tomorrow night. They'll take on Atlanta United down at their beautiful new stadium in downtown Atlanta. 6 o'clock p.m. will be when they begin that contest. The game will be broadcast on 94.9. Pregame coverage starting at 5:45. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Tell us who or what's made you mad. That should be a lot of fun coming up at noon. And I've got mine ready to go. Kenny Albert also in the third hour of the program, and a little Friday trivia in the final hour. We've got some good gift cards to give away, some Papa John's pizza for that in the final hour of the program. So you're going to want to get involved in that. So when you look at, you know, the Titans getting closer to all this, and if you didn't hear us during that interview with Terry McCormick, the Broncos have made it official. There will not be any fans in the stands when the Titans and the Broncos start their season off on Monday Night Football. You know, that is the interesting part, at least early on. No fans in the stands, if that's the case, around the league, at least for the month of September. When you think about it, Denver on a Monday night to start the season, that would be a really, really difficult place to start, right? Well, just like as we're seeing in the NBA, just like we're seeing in the NHL, just like we saw when they were in the bubble in MLS, no fans in the stands. There is no home field, home ice advantage. And that's completely taken away. When you think about some of the tougher places to play, Denver in that spot would have been a tough place to play, but the crowd won't be involved, and I have to say that's a huge advantage for the Titans.
They have great fans in Denver for sure. They've got one of those regional teams where their fan base stretches for a long, long way outside of Denver. They've got an excellent following. So I agree with you. I'm curious as to where the league is right now in their league-wide policy on fans. I don't know that there is one. I think we talked about this yesterday. Jerry Jones came out and said, we want to have fans. We're going to have some fans. Other teams have said, we're not going to have fans. Sometimes it's not even the team that's announcing it. It's the whatever falls under the jurisdiction of where the stadium is, right? The city. The city leaders, the mayor, the governor, whoever. And so we're left to guess. I don't know if it's a league-wide policy. You would think a league like the NFL would have a league-wide policy on fans, at least for a timetable, right? No fans the first few weeks while we see what's going on. I don't know. I'm a little surprised at that, wouldn't you think?
Well, it's just like everything. I think we're not in that world to know who governs who and who has the jurisdiction to, you know, tell everybody, or is there a reason why, you know, it's basically left up to states, you know, and the governors or the cities and the mayors or both, rather than a league telling the entire, you know, a commissioner of a league telling everybody you must be unified and you have to do this a certain way, because, you know, there's certain owners that make their voice heard and have a lot of clout. And oh, by the way, that commissioner works for them, and he tells them, well, my state is going to let me have fans, so we're going to have fans. Don't forget, I just told you, Nashville SC is going to be, you know, in Atlanta this Saturday. Well, they're coming off two games down in Dallas, and what was in the stands? Fans. Now, the second game, that got squashed because of the rain and the long delay, but you know, in Texas, in Dallas, they were allowed to have fans. So Jerry Jones is like, well, if the MLS team can have people in the stands, you bet we're going to have people in the stands. So I just think it's virtually impossible. My guess would be for you to dictate to these owners what they have to do. I think you have to leave it up to currently what their rules are in their state, I guess.
Okay, I found this, Darren. This is the closest I can find to a policy. It says, if you want to attend an NFL game in 2020, you're going to wear a mask. That's the new mandate issued by the league. So the league mandate is, if you have fans, you have to wear a mask, which makes perfect sense. That was announced, I guess, on Wednesday. The requirement will be enforced league-wide, and it supersedes a lack of local mandate. So, in other words, even if your local jurisdiction doesn't require you to wear a mask, the NFL will enforce their right to turn you away at the door if you attempt to enter the stadium without one. This will inevitably bring the league one step closer to reaching common ground with the NFLPA on the matter of safety amid the pandemic, as players threaten to sit out the season if their concerns remain unaddressed. It doesn't mean every NFL team will be allowed to have fans in the stands. The Giants and the Jets have announced a ban on fans until 2021. This came immediately after New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy set a statewide limit of 500 persons for any and all large events, including NFL games. So several other teams will allow the presence of fans. So far, the Falcons have announced they'll allow between 10,000 and 20,000, in keeping with state and local requirements. We know Georgia's requirements from the start have been pretty loose compared to a lot of other states. So we know where Jerry Jones stands. I don't see any other teams that have made an announcement that they will have fans. So it'll be interesting to keep this checklist on what each particular team says they're going to do, at least to start the season.
You know, that's why I go back to what, you know, our big discussion we had earlier in the week. Like, I just don't understand why we can't have some people in Nissan Stadium and they have to wear a mask. So be it. If you don't like it, that's fine. That's your prerogative. It's their prerogative to tell you you have to wear a mask. And let's get some people in the stands. I mean, in social distance, you got plenty of room. And do that. There's nothing wrong with that in my mind. If that's what we've been telling people you need to do, then why can't we do that at a Titans game? Why? It doesn't make any sense. If we're telling everybody to social distance and wear a mask and wash your hands, and if you can do that, then why don't we have them do that? What are we doing? What are we talking about? If we're talking about 10,000 people in a stadium that holds 70, you can't spread people out? 10,000 people over the course of Nissan Stadium and have everybody at a safe distance? Of course you can.
Yeah.
Wear a mask, and if you don't like it, don't go.
We think you can. We don't know what will happen as a result if you try, but you won't know until you try. So I see both sides. I can see playing it safe, at least to start with, and I can see, you know, trying. I might start a little smaller and try to grow it as I get the data. You know, okay, we tried 5,000, we tried 10,000, and I think that went okay. So let's now go from 10,000 to 15,000. Are we okay? Okay, we're okay. Let's keep going. You know, I think small, measured ways of doing this would be the way to go. But
I'm fine with that because I think your staff needs to get acclimated to it too. So I just got a text.
Oh, I think that's a huge part of it, right? True enforcement of the mandates, because I think we all agree that if you're going to do it, you have to do it right. You have to have a lot of discipline. And we know that from all the pictures we see in certain places, there's no discipline at all. So you have to have enforcement of discipline. If you let people, you know, do whatever they want once they go through that gate, not everybody's going to follow the rules.
And that is going to be the toughest part of this. I mean, I just got a text while we were having this conversation with a Titans season ticket holder. And their question was, well, if I have a beer or if I get some food at the concession stand, do I have to wear my mask or how does that work? You know, and if one of the attendants sees you without your mask on, and you hold up a beer and say, hey, well, I'm drinking this. You know what I mean? So, I'm not envious of their job. Like, I don't know how they're going to handle those types of situations.
So, if you have 10,000 fans, you can't have 10,000 babysitters or onlookers watching every second.
Correct.
And saying, wait, this person has their mask off. They have their mask off. Oh, wait a minute. He's eating a hot dog. That's okay.
Binoculars. I mean,
you can't monitor them for 3 hours.
Right.
You can't do it.
No.
And so if a guy has six beers, you may tell him to put his mask on, and he may, you know, there's no telling what the guy might do if he's out of control. So there's just a lot of things that can happen the more people you let in. So any measure of bringing fans in has got to go lockstep with a system that you feel really good about can keep everybody going with the guidelines. And 10,000 people is 10,000 people. How many people are enforcing those 10,000? And what are you paying those people? That goes with the territory there.
Were there not high school football games last night? Here in the Mid-State, I thought I saw fans in the stands with masks, and I was happy to see that. Like, I don't know if
I haven't seen any clips from what it looked like in the stands. I would like to see that. And I know there's a lot of other games scheduled for tonight. I'm going to try to make a note to watch and see the highlight shows and some of the broadcasts. I know Max is part of one. We should ask Max.
Max, is everything on at Stewart's Creek?
Well, it's at Mount Juliet.
It's at Mount Juliet,
yes.
Okay.
It's at Mount Juliet, but there will definitely be fans there, that's for sure.
Have they said...
Is it a limited capacity?
Right.
Or?
Have they said,
think so, but it's a pretty big number for most of the schools that I've seen putting it out.
Are they going to be wearing... Are they told they have to wear a mask? How does that...
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm curious to see what it looks like. That's for sure. I was at a practice yesterday and everything felt normal, but again, those are people who have already all interacted with each other. So I don't think you can pick and choose and get that deep on it just with a practice.
I was reading a story this morning, a high school football game that was in, I believe, Utah. I think that's right. And the AD came out and stopped the game because everybody up in the stands, everybody was wearing masks. They were on top of each other. And their athletic director literally stopped the game and said, you better spread out. You better put your mask on. And that's when we'll start the game back up. Until then,
good.
We're not playing. So figure it out or else. And that's why I'm saying that you can do this stuff. Like, I'm okay with this, but let's try. You know what I mean? Like, what I've come to the conclusion and why I've been saying the stuff that I've been saying, like, just not trying is not acceptable in my book anymore. It's just not. We're 6 months in. Like, you have to try these things, and I'm okay with this. This is fine. If you can't comply to the rules, then fine. This is the punishment. This is what happens. And I applaud the AD that said, fine, we'll stop the game. Get away from each other. You're on top of each other. Spread out. Put your mask on, or this game is over. We're just going to cancel it. And guess what? Yeah. They did. And then they resumed play.
I was reading an article, Darren, earlier in the week that I passed along to you about some quarterbacks. There's some Division I prospects, right? Some are can't miss, already committed, gonna play at the next level, whether there's high school football or not. And some are still trying to fight to get the exposure to get a chance to play. It's a really good, under the microscope look at what individual families are dealing with this, right? Depending on where, just the importance of playing high school football, what it means to them. So they play in Southern California. I think they looked at three or four families who have quarterbacks in their family that are trying to play. High school football shut down. Not going to play in the fall. So there are some families that have tried to look for another area, another place where there is high school football playing so they can play. And different families are doing different things. It's a great article. It's in The Athletic. One family went to Utah because they were starting, and not only starting, but starting early. So Utah has been playing for a couple of weeks in the high school level, and it's been interesting.
Maybe that's why I saw that
story.
There
have been games.
Okay.
Yeah, they have been playing games, but there have been a lot of schools that had to stop and cancel. So it's a little bit like baseball. They're playing, but there are some bumps in the road, and they've had to shut some things down. And I don't know what the level of testing is in Utah compared to baseball. Like, for example, the Mets are the latest team. They had two positive tests. Hopefully they'll learn from the mistakes of the Cardinals and the Marlins, right, because the contact tracing is so important. You got one guy that tested positive, and you can't just say, or one player and one staff member, in this case for the Mets. The mistake that the Cardinals made and the Marlins was, oh, well, we just have these two positive tests. Everybody else is okay, so they can go play. When the real, and then they found out in the days after that led to a lot of other positive tests.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're worried about. And that's what I'm worried about, quite honestly, with anybody playing high school football, regardless of whether it's our state or any other state. Is unless you have the testing and the ability to trace when somebody tests positive, what will be the ripple effect with the team? And then on top of that, you're adding the layer of who's allowed to come to the game, what happens as a result of everybody being at the game.
I think
it's a challenge.
What I'm being told is a lot of schools here, they're not allowing students to travel to the opposition stadium, that just the family.
Yeah.
The family of the players can go, which I don't know how you monitor. Once again, I don't know how you monitor. I'm
that's
not envious of them. How do you monitor
right.
that?
Who's enforcing that?
That's
who's
my,
enforcing
that's
that?
My brother. Oh, really? Well, do you have to show proof of ID? Like, how does that work?
I mean, and who's doing that? Is the science teacher or the English teacher or the gym teacher? Hey, Mr. McFarland, you teach sixth period. You love football. Your job is to check every team's fan from the other team and make sure that it's just family, okay? All right, that's your job. And by the way, you're not getting paid. We'll pay an extra $20. Like, who wants that job? Like, we had in our summer baseball tournaments, that was on the website, the policies, everything made a lot of sense. Spread out along the field. Don't sit together. And there was even one tournament that said you can only have one family member per kid. You think that was enforced over the weekend?
No.
It sounded great. It made perfect sense. Let's keep the numbers down. Nobody was enforcing that.
Willie, it's kind of like what we talked about with these youth tournaments. Like, you can have rules, and that's fine. But we both know. We've been there. I mean, it's virtually impossible. You can't. they don't have the manpower to do that stuff. Like, really?
Right. So that's the concern when you want to let 5,000 fans in or 10,000 fans in. That would be my concern. I think we can do it, and in theory, if everybody is on the same page, mm-hmm. it can be done, I think. But is everybody on the same page, and is everybody enforcing it if somebody's not on the same page? That's what I worry about.
Do you know how the OVC said they're going to play in the spring? Right? That was the announcement. They're not going to have fall sports. Eastern Kentucky, have you seen this? Eastern Kentucky has come out and said, yeah, thanks, but we're going to play in the fall, and we're already scheduling teams. Like, they're going to open up their season at Marshall. Right. I will tell you this, Willie, and I don't know where this is going. I'm just telling you. I spoke with somebody yesterday, and I'm just here to tell you the Big Ten thing as a conference may be dead for the fall, but I am just here to tell you, I'm being told there are teams in the Big Ten that are absolutely trying to still play in the fall. They are working diligently behind the scenes to try to just go rogue and say, fine, we're playing. That is happening. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm just telling you, I'm being told it is absolutely going on. Like, they are not throwing in the towel. There are certain teams in the Big Ten that I'm not willing to say on the air. Teams, plural, that are not not preparing for the spring. They are preparing for the fall.
I don't know how
it's going to play out.
But I'm just saying that the Big Ten as a conference will not play as a conference. Now, that's a great question with legal ramifications and, you know, are you allowed to stay in the Big Ten if you do that? Right? Or is it caution to the wind?
I would say
if you go rogue, what are the ramifications of being a member of
the Big
Ten?
Hint.
Or are they going to get the okay from the Big Ten saying, okay, this one time we'll let you do this because of the circumstances?
Here's your hint. They're not throwing these teams out. They go rogue. Okay? Your conference is dead. If they pull this off and if they try to strong arm them and say you're out of the conference, good luck. Bye, Big Ten. That conference goes bye-bye.
I'm not talking about throwing them out of the conference. I'm talking about financial repercussions for going against what the league has mandated. Really, are you going to kick Ohio State or Michigan, who, you know, they've been the bedrock of the Big Ten for a century? You're not going to do that. But could you, if they went rogue, would there be penalties? I would think that there would be.
Good.
And maybe
question. That
school says, I don't care. I'll take the penalty. We'll
I don't know if
it'll
be Kevin Warren doling out, because he might not be the commissioner if this actually happens. Because let me, in all seriousness, you think Eastern Kentucky's the last team to do this?
Well, didn't you tell me Austin Peay was going to try to do something similar?
They're having a game in a week.
Tennessee Tech.
Tennessee Tech is going to TCU. Yeah. But Eastern Kentucky is putting together a 10-game schedule. Like, they're not just going to play a couple – or 8 games, you're right. Yeah. They're not just going to play a couple games. They're doing an eight-game schedule.
That's interesting. Do they have the league's blessing to do that would be my question. Because I'm looking at the tweet that sort of released this. I'll have to read the article from the Richmond, Kentucky newspaper, the Richmond Register. But, I mean, I'll tell you what, is it – if you're playing for that team, you're going to go get your brains beat out at Marshall, West Virginia, Troy. I mean, you're going to be a big underdog. Is that worth
Citadel,
it?
Citadel, Stephen F. Austin, Troy, Marshall, West Virginia, Central Arkansas twice, Western Carolina. I mean, that's not beat your brain. I don't know about. I mean, that's not exactly a murderer's row schedule. I mean, come on.
I guess not, but.
I mean, I realize Roy Kidd isn't the coach at Eastern Kentucky anymore. Remember, Eastern Kentucky used to be really, really good.
Oh, they've had some good teams. I guess my question is, they must feel like they're not going to play in the spring. As much as they want to play in the spring, it's not going to happen, so let's get some football in. I would think there would be a lot of sense in saying, if we're going to play in the spring, let's play in our league and let's try to win a league championship. That would be very meaningful. Long range. If the alternative in your mind is no football, then I can see. Okay, let's just see if we can get some games in. If we've got the blessing to do this, but how does the OVC feel about this? That's what I'd like to know.
Great question. All right, we'll come back. If you missed our conversation with Kyle Brandt from NFL Network, you're going to want to hear this. We get into a lot of really good stuff with him, and that's how we're going to start off the second hour on this Friday. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.